Welcome to the intersection of theater and even more theater. You have achieved stage grok. Stage Grok, the roaming theater podcast, coming to you from the geographic center of the American Theater. I'm your host, Scott Miller. Today I talk with actor and teacher Tom Murray in his office at CBC High School about the late, great Theater Factory. Okay, thank you for talking to me.
My pleasure, sir.
I really want to talk about Theater Factory. I saw, I think, three shows towards the end of Theater Factory's life. Was thrilled by all of them. And I've never really known all that much about Theater Factory. So the center of it is Hope Wardak, right?
Hope Wardak and her family founded the theater, financed the theater, and pretty much ran it out of their house.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And so how long was Theater Factory around?
Started in the summer of 83, and their last production was in the summer of 92. So I guess a full 10 years.
And what I always found so remarkable when I would find an old program or read about it or whatever was that they were doing the kind of stuff I've been doing with New Line, Anyone Could Whistle, Sunny Bark with George, but also pretty mainstream stuff and also historical stuff.
She tried to mix it up. She tried to include some of the classic shows with stuff that was definitely cutting edge, or she wanted to do things that you would not see in St. Louis at some of the other theaters. Things that were definitely not going to be performed at the Muni, didn't come through on tours. The Rep wasn't doing many musicals in those times. And then as far as the historical stuff went, she hooked up with the History Museum and did a couple of really nice shows using the materials of the time, kind of like what Histrionics ended up doing.
Oh, yeah.
But she wrote the material herself and chose the music so that it would feature a very, very, very wide range of types. I mean, it was very inclusive before that became the rage.
So some of these shows she was creating.
She did. She wrote the material and got the music together, and it was usually, you know, period music. For instance, I guess the first was the World's Fair show that they did in conjunction with the World's Fair celebration that they were having at the History Museum. They had an exhibit at the time. And so she went out and got all kinds of music from the period and wrote a script that talked about the founding of the fair committee and how the fair progressed. And then to make sure it was inclusive, she included a lot of songs that probably wouldn't have been included in 1904. She got a lot of ragtime. A lot of black performers were in the show. It was a ball, you know. It was really a fun time. And then she did the same thing with a number of different shows over the years. I think one that towards the end was about World War II and on the home front. And it was very fascinating with all the World War II music and the swing and all that. It was fun.
Now, were those shows like more narration, or were they more like
a little
musicals?
Both. I mean, characters would come in and tell stories about the period. Sometimes they would have the actors reenacting characters, kind of like a Ken Burns documentary,
right,
where the lines were written from letters that she had found or that were at the history. She used the resources of the History Museum as the basis. So a lot of times the actors would act it out. A lot of times it would be narrators. But more often than not, it was more of the vignettes performed by actors, which I thought was clever.
So it seems like you guys also sometimes did really old shows. Is that true?
She pulled out, I know she did OK, which
oh,
was
right, right. I
an
remember
old
that.
One that, you know, nobody did
Gershwin
OK
show.
For a long time. And when they did it, everybody was like, wow. That music came from that show?
Right.
I mean, how cool is that?
All these famous songs, but nobody knows the show they come from.
And she would do shows, you know, plays that were older, that hadn't been done for a while. Like she did Man Who Came to Dinner, and she did Thousand Clowns, which hadn't been done in St. Louis in decades when she pulled it out. So she was looking for stuff that was classic, but not considered classic with quotation marks.
And she was doing stuff like Nine, Sunny in the Park with George, which Sunday were brand new George, when y'all were doing
them. I don't know how many have done Sunday since in the Midwest.
Not but many. We did it, New Line.
they did it twice. And
right. I saw the second one.
The second one she did, I think, because it was her last year, and I think she wanted to go out with something that she loved and was very attached to.
And if I remember, it was with Emily Lesser
and Don Stevenson her
right.
husband.
We're
at
married,
the time.
Yeah.
Before that, it was with Julia Kiley, who's a New York actress, and Michael McGuire, who came out of the Les Mis cast in New York. That was his vacation. He was en Gérard in New York.
So back at the beginning of Theater Factory.
1983.
And you were in the first show, right?
Guys and Dolls.
Do you have a sense of why Hope thought we needed this company? Like, why at that moment, let's start a new company?
Yeah, I do, because I had a long talk with her about it, because I wasn't convinced it was a good idea. she and a bunch of her classmates at Circle on the Square in New York had decided that they needed a home to further develop their abilities, their talents, and they wanted to work. And most of these people were from New York. So they decided that they needed a base, and Hope suggested St. Louis because at the time there really wasn't a whole lot going on here. Stages was just getting started, and you had the Muni. And as far as the summer musical theater scene or the summer theater scene, there wasn't much going on. Theater Project was in existence, but they were starting their diaspora looking for places to perform.
And they almost never did musicals.
And almost never did musicals. Yeah. So that was one of the things she thought, well, let's go somewhere where we can really get the thing off the ground. And she thought, well, I have connections in St. Louis. And she did. She was a Mary Institute girl, and she had political and financial connections here, and she used them. And so you had people like Symington's working for you, and
wow.
And there were some pretty heavy political hitters working on Theater Factory at that very first year.
So for you, doing that first show, did it feel different in any way from other companies? Was there a different kind of aesthetic or agenda or anything? Or
it was smaller, and I really liked that. It was
Which was unusual then, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. In St. Louis, everything was big.
Right.
If I did shows in New York, it was big. You know, Westbury Music Fair. So coming here, the idea of working with a small, young company where most of the performers were in their 20s, early 20s to boot, was great. Because I was the old guy and I was 30. So it was like, this is fantastic because we can really... And actually, I brought one of my students to audition. He was afraid to go to the audition by himself, so I went. And while I was there, some people knew who I was and said, you need to audition. I said, no, I don't. I'm not doing that anymore. I'm a school teacher.
So you were teaching. You didn't want to be an actor
anymore. I was giving it up. Yeah, decided that this was... I didn't have time to be a teacher and directing and then do the acting too. So that changed.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I thought so too. It's like, okay, well...
So what shows did you do with Theater Factory?
Well, on stage or working backstage, I did 20, which I think is as many as anybody did. I guess the highlights for me would be the Guys and Dolls, which was fun. It was fun to do the first show.
Yeah.
Just because it was the situation, I mean, the demographics were horrible. We did it in the middle of July. It was 100 degrees. There was no air conditioning in the theater. The audience was sweltering, but we all had a great time. But I guess as we went on, we did shows like Barefoot in the Park, which was a blast to do. Brendan Burke directed, and who one of the great rep actors.
Yeah,
that was
I remember
a blast.
Him.
And then the one year where things really got off the ground for them artistically, I think, was the '89 season where they had that was the year they did Sunday in the Park. That was their first version that they did at the Art Museum, but they also did Twelfth Night at Mary Institute Country Day. They did it at the Codasco campus. And they did Boys Next Door, which was a show that the Rep hadn't even done yet. They did it a couple of years later, and that took all kinds of awards.
Nice.
And I think that was, if I was to say if there was a highlight to my career as an actor, that was probably it. You know, there were no Kleins back then, but I pretty much swept all the other awards in town as far as best supporting actor. So I thought, oh, this is pretty cool. And it's for a character guy like me.
Yeah.
It's always best supporting actor, you know, best actor. So I had a blast that summer. But, I mean, again, I think for me it was just the idea of being consistent and steady and being available to work either as an actor or a stage manager or just sort of keep things going. So I did something in every season, which I thought was, in this town, to be hired by the same company for 10 straight years is pretty rare because, you know, personalities do flare up and things happen. But
so what was special about Hope Werdak? I've heard so many stories about her. Everybody thinks she's amazing. Why could she corral all this talent and make all this happen?
Two words, passion and charisma. She was charismatic with a capital CH. I mean, she could just, she could get you to do anything. She was a tiny little woman who had so much energy and so much just zeal. That would be the best way to put it. She was on a crusade, and by God, you went marching with her.
Was it, because a lot of companies start, especially small companies start, and it's incredibly difficult, but a lot of that difficulty is money, which I think was not the case here, right?
Not at the beginning, no. I mean, the money at the beginning was obviously family money and contributions from some of their friends who had some resources. And as things went on and it became more of a business, I think it began to rely more on, we've got to pay the bills.
Right.
And I think that's where some of that zeal may have started to wane just a bit. Just the whole
the business side
the
sucks.
The details of trying to keep the company alive and pay salaries and
right.
keep and bouncing from locale to locale, I think, got to be a strain.
And hiring a lot of equity, right? A
lot of equity, but not at the beginning, just okay. a few. And then she did go to that the small professional theater contract, and she never went overboard with that. She didn't hire too many. I think the problem was she just got to where they couldn't find a home to stay in, and that hurt, I think, the development of the theater.
Was that the downfall of Theater Factory?
I don't know if that was the downfall, but I think the constant battles about where are we going to play next year, I think finally...
I'm in touch with that.
It wore her down. But so you've got this great new gig, so
yeah.
Congratulations, by the
Thank
way.
Thank you.
That is a very big coup.
Yeah, it's going to be cool.
But I think that's one of the things I think that really got to her was the constant, where are we going to be, how are we going to pay for it. You know, my friendships with people can only go so far.
And you guys were working at the old CBC for a while,
we did,
right?
We did 84 through 86
I
at
think
the old
I saw
CBC.
She Loves Me there.
They did. That was one.
And
of
also A, My Name is Alice?
A, My Name is Alice was at Mary Institute.
Oh, okay. All right.
They did a whole, from 87 until, I'm guessing 89, they did those seasons at Country Day, Mary Institute, either in the small theater at Mary Institute or the big theater, Country Day, depending on what show they were doing.
And I remember both of those shows. I knew the score of She Loves Me quite well at that point, but I'd never seen it.
Oh.
So it was thrilling to see it, and it was an amazing production. Oh my God, I just loved the production. And also, A, My Name is Alice, I knew nothing about that except the title. I had heard the title.
What a great show.
Yeah, but really, really cool show.
Oh.
And I saw both of those, I think, just after I'd gotten out of college.
Well,
and
know,
it was
she,
it really kind of jazzed me to keep plugging in
really
musical theater.
She wanted to do shows that had a strong presence for women. I mean, that was one
right.
of the things she aimed to do, because as a young female performer and actress herself, she wanted to do some shows where she could act. You know, we did Philadelphia Story at Wash U, and she played Tracy Lords. She was awesome.
Nice.
You know, everybody goes, well, she's not Katharine Hepburn. Oh, yeah, but this is her background, too.
Right.
She can definitely
right.
relate to this character.
Did she perform a lot?
She did, and she was she was.
I don't think I knew that.
She was the mayor when we did Anyone Can Whistle. Ah. She was hilarious. She was a tiny little woman out there with all these, and they had all, they cast really big guys as her henchmen, you know, I being one of them, you know, and just the mere presence of very tiny and huge, 6 foot bigger at the time. I was 300 plus pounds. And it was the funny aspect of just having this little person ordering us all around. And doing ballet at the same time. It's pretty funny. Nothing funnier than 6 foot eight guys doing ballet.
That's kind of fascinating. This may put you on the spot a little bit, but what name some other shows that we haven't talked about that Theater Factory did?
Well, Theater Factory did, as we said, they did Romance, which no one
cool
had done.
Show.
And I don't know too many people have done it since. Right. It's such a beautiful show.
I think the Goldenrod did it once.
Beautiful show.
Yeah.
God, the Goldenrod. That's another late lamented
venue.
Wonder where that's... Well, they did Carousel, which... Well, the thing that I think that St. Louisans forget about that is they did it at Faust Park.
In the Carousel House.
They did the show in the Carousel. And
that's cool.
Enoch Snow was Kevin Chamberlain, who then would get an Academy Award Tony nomination for Seussical.
Right.
And I really think that one of their best shows was 1776 that they did
at
the History Museum.
Nice.
With... Some incredible people in the cast. I mean, St. Louis's best males at the time, and some people from New York, including Michael McGraw, who would get his Tony nomination for Spamalot. He was John Adams, and let me tell you, he was John Adams. That was some incredibly strong casting there.
But before we started the interview, you and I were talking about the Nervous Set.
Nervous Set.
This incredibly weird, obscure show that nobody ever sees.
But so much fun.
Yeah.
You know, if they heard the music, they'd go, wait a minute, I've heard that song.
Right.
I've heard that song. Where have I heard that song?
Strange show.
Yeah, but great. Yeah. But a great show.
And you were in that one.
I was. I played Max the Millionaire, which was, you know, Morton May.
Did you guys, because when we worked on Nervous Set, there was this huge, like, cloud of history behind us that we're always like, this is this big moment. You know, it was a flop show, but everybody knows about this flop show. Did you feel that pressure of history?
We felt the pressure because Fran and Jay Landisman were there all the time. They were there every rehearsal.
And so she wrote lyrics and he co-wrote
the book.
Right. Yeah.
And then the music was by Tommy Wolfe.
Novel Jay had written that had never been published.
Never been published.
Right.
Which you can get.
I have a copy of it.
I do too, somewhere in here. But so, that was a great show just because you were definitely trotting on ground that hadn't been touched
in
25 years.
Yeah, well, and the music is all what I would call club jazz.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Not at all theater music.
Not at all. But it worked out.
What did audiences think of it?
They loved it. And of course, they loved it and were like, well, when did this come out? They go, Gaslight Square. You know,
59.
50s, guys. It was cool. I can't believe this. This was right here in St. Louis. I go, yeah, and you missed it then.
Yeah, and as dark as any musical now.
Yeah, and it would, you know what? I think it would be better now than it was when it first came out. It was... They weren't ready for that. That was the same year as Sound of Music.
Right.
So, I mean, you couldn't get any further from Sound of Music than the Nervous Set.
That's funny. So for me, I guess for all of us working in St. Louis theater project company is always this kind of great
icon.
Shadow in the history. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They did these amazing, wild, experimental, cool things. But for me as a musical theater guy, Theater Factory looms every bit as large, partly because I did see the work at the end, and it was really wonderful.
They were the first
group. Also because I've heard so many stories, and so many people were involved and touched by this company.
It was the first company that I'd worked for that did musicals outside the box.
Yeah.
And I like those kind of musicals. They're way more fun.
Yeah.
And they're more meaningful. You learn more as a person by doing something that challenges you.
And the audience gets more out of
Rodgers
nine
and
than they get
is
out
not
of
challenging,
yeah.
But you know,
yeah.
Everybody go to the Muni and go see the musicals down there because, you know, they're great. But
yeah.
If you can do something that's a little edgy, then more power to you, because that's how the young people learn to be actors, is by doing something that tests them.
Right. If it ain't scary, what's the point?
That's right. Well, if it doesn't make them, if it doesn't rev them up and get them a little bit enraged, then it's not doing its job.
I found this quote a while back from Uta Hagen, And it said, I think this is exactly the quote, it's close if not. And it was, if you do not make the audience bigger, better, then do not act. I think that's so wonderful.
She once said to me, I had a summer of classes with Uta Hagen.
How cool!
And she said to me, she says, you are a very big man. Stop trying to be small.
Wow, I love
on
that.
On stage. And I go,
love that.
Okay, and she says, be yourself. So I was.
I understand course, that. You know, I've seen big guys have that.
If you go to act on the camera, they go, no, too big.
Right,
but, you know, I'm primarily a stage guy, so yeah. I enjoy being big.
That's awesome. So what happened to Hope after Theater Factory closed?
Hope went, you know, she did this thing at the end of the run of Theater Factory where she had gotten interested in doing documentary film work. And she had actually...
Oh, I remember hearing about this.
She documented the last season of Theater Factory and kind of the behind the scenes and with some of the actors that it. And she decided to make a movie with the actors who had been in many of the shows. And a lot of them came back. A lot of them were on Broadway at the time, came back, did interviews. So she kind of put together this little film about the history of Theater Factory and the avant-garde musicals that they'd been doing. So she got really interested in doing film work and eventually moved to Los Angeles to do that. Now, I don't know if she's still working in that area or not. One of the original Theater Factory guys, Duffy Hudson, was in town last week, and he and I actually met after Fantastics at Insight. We had a beer and we talked about it because I said, well, I'm going to go talk to, you know, Scott Miller here in town about Theater Factory. What do you remember? And he says, well, I just remember that, you know, we thought we were the bomb. I said, but he was
well, from my limited experience, you were the bomb.
Well, you know, we were definitely doing things that nobody else was going to touch.
I mean, I almost feel like you guys kind of laid out a welcome mat for New Line.
I think so. And that's why I've always enjoyed what you guys do at New Line, because it was one of the reasons why I think I've always enjoyed your companies, because it reminded me a lot of Theater Factory. In fact, when you guys did You're in Town, we did it here the next fall. But just because I said, well, I that's a great show, and I don't, you know, I'm going to do it, and the heck with my principal's not going to understand the name You're in Town. I said, the only thing about it is the name. Everything else about it is okay.
Yeah,
it's only slightly subversive. You're okay.
I think a lot of high schools are doing it now.
I think they are. Yeah. We were the first ones here, and then everybody was like, "You got away with it?" And I go, "Yeah, we got away with it." Okay, good. We can do it now.
Yeah, because we did it, I guess, like 8 years ago.
Yeah, we 07? Did ours. We did ours in the spring, the fall of 07.
Yeah, yeah. So Theater Factory lives on.
I think so. I think that was one of the things that it did. Is it inspired a lot of people to do shows that were of that same vein. And I think that was a good thing.
Yeah. All right, so last question. Assess the St. Louis theater scene. Where do we stand right now?
I think the St. Louis theater scene is as healthy as it's been in a long time. Artistically, I think we have more companies taking chances and doing good work. I wish we could get to the point where people could earn a living here being actors.
Yeah.
I really do. There are very few of us who make any kind of money as actors, but I understand the finances, and it's just, you know, an occasional professional here and there is still costly. So I understand that. I understand that's a problem in any small city in the United States, and that's what we've got here is a small city. So I think,
and to some extent, hasn't that always been a problem throughout the history of Western civilization?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we had a little
the actors never get paid what they're worth.
A little time period in the 80s and 90s where the equity theaters in town were vibrant enough so that they could pay. And so you'll find a lot of actors my age, a lot of actors in their 50s and early 60s that worked here for quite a while, but you don't find many young actors that have an equity card, and if they do, they're not here. They leave here and go to New York or Los Angeles or Toronto or Vancouver or Chicago.
Well, because if you get an equity card in St. Louis, you're not going to get enough work that you can live on, and you're going to get locked out of a lot of work.
Well, you're going to get locked out of a lot of work. Some of us get enough work to be okay, but certainly there have been a lot of opportunities that if I had not been equity, I could have gotten. But for me, I'm at the point where, you know, I have what's called the pension, And if I was to drop out of Equity, then I wouldn't have that pension. So I can't afford to drop out.
Right.
But at the same time, if you're a young performer and you're going to go to New York, you probably have to have a card when you get there.
Yeah.
But I think the state of the business in St. Louis is, how many companies do we have? Dozens?
Well, you know, we have a webpage on our site that lists them all, and it's always between like 60 and 80. Because, you know, companies are always dying and being born and so forth. But it's between 60 and 80 if you count all the community theaters. And that's a lot of theater.
And I do. I think you need, because some of the community theater work is incredibly strong, too.
Absolutely.
There are a lot of people who made choices years ago that, you know, I could do this for a living, or I could run my accounting business and do it for fun, but I'm still a heck of an actor.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for talking
to me,
Tom.
My pleasure, Scott.
Thank you for joining us. This is Scott Miller. Now you too have achieved stage grok. See you next time.